Coming up on Tech News Today, can the NSA break things like SSL? Darren Kitchen and Steve Gibson will discuss that. Also, has Elon Musk turned himself into Iron Man? And PayPal, they can let you dine and dash and still pay. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, September 6th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. The New York Times, ProPublica, and The Guardian have reports based on documents leaked by Edward Snowden, implying the NSA has the ability to break encryption on SSL, TLS, and VPN. Security experts like Bruce Schneier say it's possible the NSA has the ability to break some encryption not known about in the academic community, but longer keys like 2048-bit or 3072-bit RSA keys would probably thwart it anyway. Snowden himself said in an interview in June that properly implemented strong crypto systems are one of the few things you can rely on.
A promotional video for Android KitKat earlier this week may have shown off a little hint of Google's next Nexus device. Today, a filing from the FCC detailing a new unreleased LG device shows off possibly a bit more. The Nexus 5 could be this D820 from the filing. The images shared with the FCC line up with the sneak peek revealed in Google's video. It contains wireless charging based on the Qi standard, a feature of the LG Nexus 4. And per the filing, this supposed Nexus 5 would offer 7-band LTE, 802.11ac Wi-Fi networking, a 5-inch display, and come with Android 4.4 preloaded.
An Apple announcement is scheduled for next week, so let's pile in as many Apple rumors as possible.
Whee!
According to the Wall Street Journal, Apple is currently testing iPhones with screen sizes ranging from 4.8 inches up to 6 inches. These giganto models are not the ones expected for next week. Additionally, 9to5 Mac reports that the next version of OS X, Mavericks, will be released at the end of October. There's even murmurs that the iPad version of iOS 7 may be pushed back until October as well. In a strange twist, Apple has confirmed all of these rumors as true. Nah, they didn't say that. That's just a rumor, too.
You almost got me. Twitter account LevLeaks shows pictures supposed to be the new Lumia 1520 Windows phone. The phone shows a device very similar to previous Lumias, including a camera at the rear and a slight hump like the Lumia 925. The device is expected to have a 6-inch 1080p display. And The Verge reported earlier this month that AT&T is testing the 1520 for release in the United States by the end of the year.
Federal Judge Denise Coate has issued an injunction against Apple in the case of Apple conspiring with publishers to set ebook prices at the launch of the iBookstore. The injunction, which is set to go into place in 30 days, will last for 5 years, but the court can extend it for one or more one-year periods after that, either on its own or at the request of the DOJ or the states. Apple may seek a stay of the injunction pending its appeal.
An Apple announcement is scheduled for next week, so let's pile in some more Apple news.
Whee!
The Wall Street Journal reports that a verified China Telecom account on Weibo posted an advertisement showing off the iPhone 5S and 5C. Now, the post was taken down, but because this is the internet, there are tons of screenshots of the post floating around the web. The post said that China would be one of the first markets to get the new iPhones. That would be an unusual move for Apple, since China normally had to wait months before getting the previous versions of the iPhones.
Google rolled out Chrome apps yesterday. The Chrome browser has had web apps in a store since 2010. So if you're like, wait a minute, what? Yesterday. But these new apps work more like native apps you'd find in Windows, OS X, or Linux. Among other capabilities, they can work outside the browser window, they can work offline, and they can sync across platforms. The apps only work in Windows and Chrome OS right now. OS X capability is scheduled to arrive in 6 weeks. 50 apps can be found in the web store, and you can find the store by going to chrome.google.com.
Salesforce.com has announced the beta launch of Salesforce Files, an upgrade to its Chatterbox file sharing and sync system. Users can gain the ability to use any device and retrieve documents from document management systems like Documentum, FileNet, SharePoint, Box, Dropbox. You may have heard of a few. Mm-hmm. Salesforce Files also adds the ability to access third-party repositories and view business-relevant documents needed for projects, collaborations, and to close deals with customers.
Maxthon announced a partnership with MediaTek's Rolltek to bundle Maxthon's Chromium-based mobile browsers onto chips used in Android smartphones, mostly in emerging markets. That means in 2014, 100 million smartphones and tablets made by manufacturers like LGE, ZTE, TCL, Alcatel, Giany, Philips, TechChink, Konica, Lenovo Mobile, CKT, and Lava Mobile will come with the Maxthon browser preloaded. MediaTek is the third largest global supplier of chipsets for Android.
An Apple announcement is scheduled for next week, so let's talk about something else. Amazon's Jeff Bezos had his first meeting with Washington Post staffers since buying the newspaper. The staffers took to Twitter to share quotes from Bezos. Business Insider highlighted a couple of quotes that show Bezos wants the Post to think of the readers as the number one customer. Being 100% ad-supported leads a business to think the customer is the advertiser. Another Bezos quote was about innovation. He said, the recipe for innovation is stubborn on vision, flexible on details. Unfortunately, there were no quotes about Jeff Bezos' recipe for his famous three-alarm chili. That's also a secret.
Not yet. All right. Still hoping. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by ProXPN. Now, there's going to be a lot of talk. We're going to have to talk about it today, about virtual private networks and whether or not the NSA can see into them or not. Steve Gibson's going to lay down the law for us about that in a little bit. But whether or not the NSA can get into VPN, you still need a good VPN to protect yourself in coffee shops, at airports, in hotels. I mean, if you can get on the internet in hotels, everybody else can see what's going on in that on that Wi-Fi. You don't want that guy at the coffee shop sniffing your packets, getting your Facebook data, all that sort of stuff. You need a good 512-bit encrypted tunnel between you and them so that your traffic isn't going to the other server without the other folks using the same Wi-Fi seeing into it. It works via OpenVPN or PPTP. You choose, and you can protect yourself against things like the six strikes rule, against internet filtering and blocked websites, against geographical restrictions. There, you, because it's OpenVPN and PPTP, you can configure it. I configured it on Linux Mint. I've configured it on my phone myself. But you can get apps, too. In fact, there's a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN, so you don't have to think about it. World-class customer support. Even Steve gave it a great review on Security Now. That's good enough for me. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information. Sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year, so not bad, but we're going to make it better. We've got a special offer. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. And we thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. All righty. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, as usual on Friday, we're happy to have Darren Kitchen from Hack 5 with us and ThreatWire, I think, as you mentioned before the show, probably as important with today's topics. How's it going, Darren?
Oh, man, it is going very well. And yeah, it's that show, ThreatWire, it's just been all on pretty much all year. So.
And of course, also joining us on Fridays, good to have back Len Peralta, internet cartoonist, to draw the stories of the day. You got some good stuff to work with today, Len.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to get it right into it.
And let's get right into it. And joining us for this first story about the NSA that we heard about in the news fuse, of course, Steve Gibson, the man himself, GRC.net, host of Security Now, right here on Twit, and the man I immediately thought of when I started to try to put my head around this story. Thank you for joining us, Steve.
Hey, guys. Great to be here with you.
Now, just to give people kind of a rundown of what's going on, we heard a little bit about it in the news fuse. New York Times, ProPublica, Guardian all have an encryption story. Washington Post has a budget story. And I thought Cyrus Farivar of Ars Technica did a great job sort of breaking down what the NSA is capable of based on today's stories as well as other stories. So they can get volunteers to help them. We've heard about that with telcos. AT&T just says, here, have the data. They can get a company to comply under legal duress. That's what we've been hearing about with things like Prism and Google and Facebook and Yahoo. That's the in the story today, the keys provisioning service possibly is a part of that. They could get spies to infiltrate a company. Human intelligence. Just get somebody to take a job there undercover and be able to work inside. They can coerce upstream companies to weaken crypto. There's a story today about the NSA introducing weaknesses into the National Institute of Standards, the NIST standard for certain crypto. This was discovered by Microsoft researchers in 2007. Then there's what everybody's worried about, brute forcing SSL, TLS, VPN. We'll talk a little bit about that with Steve in a minute. Snowden wrote that he thinks that strong crypto is still pretty good. Then there's compromising a digital certificate, like happened with Stuxnet, just doing what hackers do, targeting a computer directly. Something like maybe if you've heard of Operations Aurora, Shady Rat, Red October, things like that. Now, I mentioned Bruce Schneier says the mathematics of cryptography will still be the most secure part of any encryption system. And Albert Wenger of Union Square Ventures said on his continuation blog, that's great, Bruce, but this is unconscionable. We need to protest against this, whether the math is good or not. Steve, help us out here. What do we need to worry about? And what do you think the NSA is really capable of?
Okay, so that's the perfect question, because what I've noticed everyone seems to have gravitated to or glommed on to is this, which is nothing but speculation, that the NSA has in some way been operating behind the scenes to weaken cryptography. Now, they do have 35,000 employees. And so I could imagine that, you know, some team of 10 is spun off and told to sort of, you know, well, if we decide that strong encryption is working against national interests, you guys do what you can to sort of, you know, be a force that's directing the industry in the direction we choose. But for example, the only thing mentioned that anyone has seen in any of these articles was one of four pseudo-random number generators, which was later found to have a theoretical weakness, and it would always have been the last one chosen because it was the slowest for generating random numbers and sort of screwy. And people looking at the choice of how it got into sort of into the mainstream saw that the NSA was encouraging it not to be dropped because they apparently liked the theoretical underpinnings of it. But other people said, well, okay, you know, you could have it in there if you wanted to. No one's going to use it because it's the slowest of all of them. And so there was like a theoretical weakness found in that. The flip side of this is that the NSA famously strengthened DES, the older crypto standard. Before it was released, the NSA made some changes to it that very subtle changes that no one understood at the time. Way later, it was found that the original DES encryption had fundamental problems, which the NSA corrected prior to letting it become a standard. So my feeling today is we have seen nothing at all concrete saying that the NSA has actually successfully weakened cryptography. I look at all the academic work, all the non-NSA public work, and say, you know, and these guys have no agenda whatsoever. If anything, they're working to create the strongest crypto possible. So what everything we actually know and actually see says that the problems are everywhere except the crypto. And the crypto itself, the math, as Bruce Schneier says, you can absolutely rely on.
Is it possible? I mean, and if it's possible, is it a problem that the NSA has encrypted maybe a common version of RSA that's not as secure and nobody knows about it, that the academic world hasn't discovered it? How likely is that?
The smartest people looking at this acknowledge the possibility theoretically that with the amount of money they have and the supercomputers they have there and the secrecy that they operate on, the NSA could know stuff that the academic cryptography community doesn't. the NSA has the advantage of taking everything that is in public and using that while keeping everything that they're doing secret. So there isn't a two-way flow here. And so that arguably gives them an advantage. But again, the argument is that even if you had some advantage, that's equivalent to removing bits from the key. So, for example, if 60-bit symmetric key is considered secure, but we're using 128 bits, then the NSA would have to have technology equivalent to removing the difference. And no one believes they do. They might have technology that could remove the equivalent of 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 bits, but not 22. I mean, that even though it seems like a small number, it's every bit doubles the difficulty and doubles the length of time. So the point is that maybe they have some advantage, but the advantage they would have to have is no one believes is even theoretically possible today.
Yeah, I would say that you're right. This is, you know, there's nothing concrete in here. This is the worst crypto nightmare kind of scenario here, and that's what's, you know, being reported on. I feel like there's actually a lot of pros and cons, actually. The revelations, really, is that the pro is that for the consumer, this is kind of bringing that awareness and encouraging people who otherwise wouldn't have thought of to actually seek out things like, you know, using strong cryptography and hopefully using it properly. But, you know, it's... The con here is that it's not just the NSA and their cohorts like the AT&Ts and Microsofts of the world that have lost our trust. It's the trust of the United States as a power in internet governance that we're losing. And, you know, I was actually in Geneva last February for the Internet Policy Forum with the United Nations, and this was before any of the Snowden leaks, and seeing 193 nations and just the kind of disdain for the United States. So I can only imagine what it's like now that all of this stuff has come to fruition. And I agree with Schneier, to quote him directly. He says, the U.S. has proved to be an unethical steward of the internet. The U.K.'s no better. Wenger says that we should become outraged. We are, you know. I feel like this is actually, I feel like the place that I call home has been attacked in this, but that we should become outraged and start a big public campaign. And yes, that's the one side of it. But then, you know, Schneier also says, like, and I believe you have to do both, that, you know, we're the engineers that built this thing. You know, it's time to take it back. And so, properly implement this stuff and I don't know. I mean, I just think it was bad enough when it was common knowledge that, okay, the NSA is sniffing everything, wiretapping everything, and brute forcing everything. But, you know, it's the thought. It's just the thought of, like, weakening crypto systems, weakening products, you know, colluding with these companies, influencing standards, the concept of infiltrating tech companies on the human level to, you know, steal keys and all the legal bullying that makes me, you know, sympathize with people like Lavabit, who decided that the only, you know, it's almost like the Joshua adage that the only winning move is not to play. And that's what they did. And Lavabit says, I strongly recommend against anyone trusting their private data to a company with physical ties to the United States. So if anything, this is good for the consumer as, you know, bringing awareness to it. But it is bad for the United States. And it's just bad for internet governance in its current form. And I just hope that this doesn't lead to a springboard of some, you know, bad players coming in and kind of taking over.
Certainly it damages the U.S. And, you know, we just saw stories where Brazil and India were both going to deliberately stop using U.S. email services, you know, after the Snowden revelations. We know that our own domestic U.S. companies are now arguing against the fact that they're unable to disclose what's going on because they've been commercially damaged by the revelations that they're secretly in cahoots with the NSA and by, you know, and that implies acting against the interests of their own customers. So I think what we're going to see over time is a technical reaction, because this is all ultimately, I mean, we have the technology is the power, and people have not been very concerned about security. If they're if we see a growth in concern about security, we have the technology to meet the demand for greater security.
And absolutely. I think that when we look at this story in summary, we really don't see anything new except that the U.S. government is doing it. And a lot of us already suspected that maybe they were doing it. But now we have more evidence. But what are they doing? They're doing all the same things that other countries are doing, that bad actors are doing all the time. And the biggest weaknesses are not the crypto. As Steve rightly pointed out at the beginning of this, the biggest weaknesses are the human side of this. And I think that's a great possibility to use this as an opportunity to strengthen our security behaviors.
And in answer to your rhetorical question, what are they doing? The answer is everything they can.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. Everything they can. And when you think about it, you know, when you tick off all those things, well, they've covered all the bases. They've essentially tackled this problem in every way they can.
Well, we could probably talk about this for an entire Security Now's worth of episode, and that's what you folks should do if you want to get more on this. Steve Gibson from GRC.com, by the way. Apparently, I sent people to the Gulf Research Company earlier today. So I misspoke when I said that. GRC.com. And of course, Security Now, twit.tv/SN. Follow Steve on Twitter as well. You can find him at SGGRC. Thank you so much, Steve, for taking
the time
to share some knowledge with us. Really appreciate it. All right, let's go on to some less, well, actually, this is pretty weighty too. Being able to pay for dinner, you know, that's important, Sarah.
Yeah, I mean, if you care about security, PayPal may or may not seem like the right way to give and receive money, but they did redesign their mobile app, the PayPal mobile app, yesterday so significantly that I think it's worth a discussion. Not only do you have in-store deals, which is something that other in-app payment services do, but you also have more food spots offering a new feature that allows you to order food ahead so that if there's a cafe on the corner near your house, you go ahead and order what you want. Then you walk in, you bypass a long line of people waiting for their lattes, and you just get your stuff and you go. And of course, the entire electronic payment happens within the app. Also, an experimental function, we talked about this a little bit in the past, that lets a group of people at a restaurant pay for the bill without actually having to give a credit card to a server. It all happens within the app. This is all functionality that the new PayPal app offers. The in-restaurant bill paying is only with select restaurants, but it is something that they're testing out. PayPal is obviously connected to your credit cards. They're stored in the wallet section of the app, but they're also experimenting with a new feature called Bill Me Later, which would essentially let a merchant offer a line of credit to consumers using PayPal, not having to strike a deal with a Visa or a MasterCard or a Discover, a major credit card company first. So that's pretty interesting. So, you know, I was playing around with this PayPal app. Obviously, in Petaluma, I've got a few of. I was going to airplay this, but apparently, it's. I can't seem to find our.
Yeah, the Apple TV. I don't know if it's even plugged in.
Oh well, bummer.
That's what
you'll
I'm
just have to believe me. There's not a whole lot going on in Petaluma as far as PayPal goes. Anyway, as far as participating merchants, there were quite a few more in San Francisco this morning. But you have a list of merchants. I can go ahead and say, all right, well, you know, the Home Depot. I'll go ahead and you know, try to pay for something in advance. There, I didn't even really know if that would work because I'm. Home Depot is not so much food and drink as lawnmowers and things like that.
They have hot dogs there.
They do.
That's true. And M&M's,
that's true.
So I know
I could bypass the Home Depot hot dog line.
That's right.
What's interesting about the PayPal app, and if anybody has downloaded this and played around with it, you may share my sentiment, is it offers so much functionality that it's kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. However, and you know, I've been using Square for a long time. Tom, I know you have too. So I think part of that is just like, ooh, different user interface. It's confusing to me. But no one else is offering a combination of in-app payments plus order food ahead of time plus sort of revolutionizing the whole don't even worry about your server at the end of the meal thing. It's all here. Do we think that this is going to give PayPal an edge, Darren? I mean, what do you think?
Oh my gosh,
this?
Are you kidding? If I had the opportunity to actually not be like kind of, I don't know, prisoner of my waiter when they kind of ignore me and I'm trying to go, but I haven't paid them. I would totally, and I can't believe that this is the only thing that would bring me back to PayPal. I love the concept that, like, you know, you sit down and the waiter brings you a receipt, maybe with a QR code or something like that. What I don't like is that that concept, which is so cool, is in this case only tied to PayPal in these few restaurants. I would rather see kind of more of a common API, because I could actually see something like that being really valuable for not just PayPal, but, you know, say it's a common QR code with, you know, the name of your waiter and the time that you were there in the restaurant. It's kind of a validation, actually, that you were in fact there. It would enhance the comment, you know, it would enhance Yelp, it would enhance Foursquare. I want to see that kind of take hold. But even in the interim, I would totally even just use PayPal just for this. I feel bad saying that.
A little curious how the credit card company is going to react to the idea of PayPal giving a line of credit that circumvents them. But I guess if they get paid in the end as the back end, maybe they won't mind too much. Let's move into the Chrome OS, Chrome apps. Is this the rise of Netscape Constellation from the 90s again, Ayaz?
It's either that or single session browsers just taken to the next degree. So Chrome turned 5 and Google introduced Chrome apps, like you mentioned in the news views. But unlike the old Chrome apps, which were pretty much glorified bookmarks, these act more like native desktop apps. They're cross-platform. They can work offline, store locally. You can also the apps can also access your computer's GPU, camera ports, Bluetooth connections. So they have a lot more hooks into your actual computer. Now, right now, the apps are only available on Windows and Chrome OS. There's even a Chrome apps launcher that shows up in your taskbar when you upgrade that version of Chrome. And you can all tab between them really easily. I actually tried it out this morning on my Windows machine. Mac users, you get to wait 6 weeks for this to show up. Linux users are also going to get this eventually. Chrome syncs your apps to any desktops, and when you sign in, you can have all your apps right back. The Chrome team told The Verge that their goal is to have Chrome apps to be so polished and powerful that users can't tell the difference between Chrome apps and regular Windows apps. Darren, do you think that we're going to see developers moving towards Chrome instead of bothering with Windows and Mac OS X? If you could just make an app for the web, why bother making these apps for operating systems?
Oh, yes. And I think that has already been said even before you tagged on the whole Chrome thing. Just using, you know, web standards, we've seen, I don't know, throughout the entire history of the web, people doing that rather than, doing desktop applications. Java had the dream of the cross-platform, and in many cases and businesses and stuff has seen the realities of that. But I see this as, you know, a huge opportunity for Google to kind of take on Microsoft, especially if they're able to, you know, make these, I feel like the number one thing is more offline, less, intensive on your internet session. So, yeah, this is a good move.
It's a great move for Chrome OS, for sure. And I think it'll be interesting, although I run NotScript on Chrome and I could not get my apps to run today on Windows, and I have a feeling that's why, because the NotScript pyramid doesn't show up and allow me to. So I'm going to have to turn that off to really give it a shot. But on the Chrome OS, the ability to have apps that work the way we're used to having apps work, I think is a big thing that will pull more people into at least investigating that platform.
Yeah, and the Chrome team also says that after the desktop, they want to get Chrome apps to work everywhere Chrome does. So that could mean what? Android, iOS, these, I guess, mini apps built within those. I think it'll be difficult to do with iOS, but when it comes to Android, now you're starting to blur lines here when it comes to applications. If Chrome has a Pocket app that could run on Android through Chrome, why would you use the Pocket app for Android? So I'm just kind of curious how Google's going to try to keep these app stores separate or together or what?
It reminds me of, you know, the Apple and the Lisa and the Apple and the Macintosh originally. The whole Chrome and Android thing. I don't know if anybody else sees the analogy there, but I love it.
A little bit.
Yeah, you have
to do that. Let's talk about some Apple stuff, but instead of just wild Apple rumors, I think Sarah's got a really, really good insight into how this whole Apple announcement might play in China.
Yeah, so the iOS is still, if you're polling the developer community, dominant in the U.S., you get more money as a developer, you get more rate of return. But Android is obviously huge in China. It's something like 90-something percent of smartphones in China are running Android. Also huge in Korea. Making strides in Japan, iOS is still dominant there. But there are quite a few developers who are now going on record as saying there are a lot of reasons not just to make sure that development isn't behind on Android, but almost to go with Android first. App Store approvals can be sluggish with iOS. They're non-existent for Google Play. So as a developer, you can iterate more quickly for Android. Monetization features like gifting and free coins are only available for Android, so you can be a little bit more creative about that. There's also an interesting study from Millennial Media, which is a mobile ad network, and they can sort of pull customer usage based on ad impressions of various OSs. And it looks like looking at the popularity of latest mobile OSs by ad impressions in the second quarter of this year, Android took about 51% of all ad impressions on the network, up from 46% in the second quarter of last year. iOS is still in second place. It actually showed a little bit of a gain, which says more about other operating systems like BlackBerry and Symbian falling off more than Android. Huge gain, but still, I mean, Android is super dominant. However, there's also a reports that the iPhone, we know that next week is the iPhone launch on September 10th on Tuesday, and we've heard that in China there's going to be a somewhat concurrent event as well to make sure that interest there is good. And that the iPhone will launch on both China Unicom and China Telecom just days after the U.S. launch. And that's significant because in the past, they've been months behind. So Apple is really, really going for it as far as making sure that China feels like this is a very relevant market for us. They may be marketing phones specifically to the Chinese market. Do we think that Apple is making the right strides to get more of a foothold in not just the Chinese market, but the larger Asian market? Darren, what do you think?
I mean, you know, obviously developers are going to go where the money is. And if you can offer them that, and if that's in the markets where they're growing, then yeah, we're going to see significant growth as we have. And, you know, that's just going to be ultimately good for the developers.
It's weird. Well, it's not weird. Weird's the wrong word. It's very intriguing to see Apple playing catch up in a market. And that, I don't think a lot of people realize, is exactly what they're doing. We had that story about MediaTek and the preloaded mobile browser on Android. Android is dominant. I mean, these numbers, I think, sort of belie where the head is in the Asian market, because people want those inexpensive phones that still have smartphone capabilities. And Xiaomi, which we talked about yesterday in China, is really riding that wave with their own version, their own customized, and doing all those things that people love about Apple, but doing them on Android and more cost effective. Whether this 5C can actually boost Apple back in front and get people in the Asian market to develop for iOS in front of Android is a good question. Everywhere else in the world, everyone says, still develop for iOS first. But not, according to these stories, not in the Asian world. They're developing for Android first because of the flexibility. And mm-hmm. what Apple is missing is the fact that when they dominate a market, they can afford to be inflexible because, hey, don't you want to be where all the people are? They don't have all the people in Asia.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a kind of interesting. Singapore, just an interesting little piece of trivia. The largest concentration of iPhone users in the entire world in Singapore.
No
doesn't
kidding.
Say much about the trend in the rest of Asia. They're going in a different direction. But you know, even a Japanese-based company, Line, which is a messaging app that's wildly popular, they realize even though in Japan, Android just doesn't have the stronghold that it does in other Asian countries, that the idea is to grow globally. The regional growth is great, but if you're going to compete with a Facebook or other services that have a global footprint, then you simply have to take Android seriously and in some cases go with Android.
Let's talk Iron Man. I thought this would get you excited, Iaz. August 23rd, Elon Musk posted on Twitter about using hand gestures to design rocket engines. And Jon Favreau, the director of Iron Man movies, said, like Iron Man? And Musk said, yup. I'm going to post a video next week. And he's got one. In fact, yesterday evening, posted a video to the SpaceX channel on YouTube showing off the Iron Man lab using a leap motion sensor, Oculus Rift, 3D projector, and a 3D printer. and said, I believe we're on the verge of a major breakthrough in design and manufacturing. Take something from your mind to a physical object with far greater ease than they currently do. And shows them actually creating a cryogenic valve housing being designed in video. It's not rock. Well, no, it's rocket science, but it's a better way to do rocket science. Cool or coolest thing ever, Darren Kitchen?
Well, cool. And I feel like if the tools evolved to actually take advantage of some of this stuff, then coolest. You know, we're still stuck in the world of 2D CAD and stuff like that when it comes to this sort of engineering. But when the tool sets actually evolved to take advantage of this awesome new, you know, innovative ways of interacting with this stuff, then yeah. I don't know if I'm going to start, like, doing NURBS with my hands in the air, but, you know.
They're designing cryogenic valves using this system, though. I mean, that's some pretty sophisticated tool usage. Sure.
If you can model things by just doing hand gestures, and this can be brought further, because I'm looking at this, and it seems really cool. It's the next stage in manipulation of 3D objects. So, I mean, we're used to using, a trackpad, then we got to touch a screen. Now we want to take our motions that we normally do. If I'm gesturing, I want that shape. If you could draw it in air and actually start using that to model, as opposed to knowing mathematics or how to do like extrusions and all kinds of weird things with 3D modeling, this could make it a lot different.
I want my rocket scientists to still know mathematics.
Well, I'm not thinking about the NASA implementation should be fine. I guess I'm thinking more about because Musk is using a Leap motion device, that could be something we could do right now. So just about accuracy in the long run, but it is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah. They're doing holograms, they're reaching out, they're touching 3D models, moving them around with their hands. It may not be quite as good as it looked in the movies, but the fact that it's even close at all already just kind of blows me away. Let's finish up.
Game, movies.
Yeah, no kidding, movies. You're slacking. Reality is about to pass you by. Reality is about to catch up with the NFL on the Xbox One, or at least that's what's with this Xbox commercial? Okay, what is it really saying?
There's an Xbox One ad. It's the first one out there. There's absolutely no mention of video games. Ad goes with it. Starts off with somebody turning on an Xbox with their voice, watching an NFL game, Skypes a friend, and then touts the Xbox fantasy football prowess. And then it ends with a big Xbox One logo next to an NFL logo. If Jason turns up the music, you hear something, that catchy Microsoft rock music thing you're getting used to. Everyone's very fit, that kind of feeling you have in every single ad out there today in technology. So in this whole ad, not one person picks up a video game controller. Not one person is playing a video game at all. And in the comments, it's coming November 22nd. In the comments section of techspot.com, a commenter by the name of Wagonator. So this is unusual that I actually look at the comments and find something like this. Quote, if you ask me, the Xbox One needs more of this kind of advertisement, actual demonstration to the masses of its features. If that commercial is unsettling to you, then you have some serious issues. Darren, do you think that Microsoft's positioning of this device as a media box, are people going to finally get over this? Because it seems like gamers have an issue with it.
Well, I mean, it's the classic thing of how do you broaden your audience? How do you sell more units to more people? Well, you make it do more things for people that previously didn't. You know, it's like it's like a coffee shop finding a way to sell coffee to non-coffee drinkers. So gamers already know the games they want are going to be on this platform. So it makes sense for out of the gate to get people talking about, have the first discussion, have the first impression so that the talk around the water cooler is, oh, do you see it integrates with NFL? Like we've established, that it plays video games. Or does it? Do we have confirmation it plays video games?
I don't know. Have we confirmed that? Have we actually seen? Yeah, actually, I think we have. I look at this and I'm like, okay, so they're trying to say the Xbox is your television. They've been trying to say that for a while. And that's what Derek Chen's email to us yesterday was about, is that different marketing approach of Sony and Microsoft. Who's going to take their big screen TV and their Xbox out on the patio, though?
Like on the ad?
Did you notice that? They're like all out on the patio. Like, no, that's not. You're not going to move that whole thing out there.
Well,
you're certainly not going to leave it out there in a big city like that.
You saw how fit everybody was. He just probably picked the TV, moved it over, moves it over later. I mean, that's
maybe he has two TVs.
You're not going to get all the NFL games unless you pay for them anyway. So you're not getting any more games than you would get otherwise. Xbox is just adding some highlights and the ability to control your TV. And as somebody pointed out in the chat room, the Xbox isn't coming to November 22nd. Season's what? Over halfway over by then?
But with the Xbox One, you get both the NFL games and the Madden games.
So if you don't like the game you're watching, you'll just play your own?
There you go.
That's interactive television.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like the news, go make some of your own. All right, let's move on to the randomizer. Had a straw poll today with our live audience as usual. Four items today. One almost didn't get any votes. Facebook-flavored ice cream. It's a real thing. Nobody cares. Scientists reveal new breakthrough in uncrackable quantum cryptography. Allows you to do more than one computer connected to the other. That's a big deal. But number three was 23%. Artificial muscles lift 80 times their weight. Pave the way for robot Superman. 26% apparently. All people care about is the NSA. NSA bans a t-shirt that made fun of it. And now we all want that shirt is the winning story at 46%. This was on Zazzle. It was a search. It was a shirt that had the NSA logo and said, "The NSA, the only part of the government that actually listens."
So what's the deal? You can't use the NSA logo in a parody now? Is that the case? Like, how can
I guess?
Like, we'll I thought that
yeah.
That's like making fun of the president and getting, you know, a cease and desist. You know, like now I had to cut the logo off my most favorite sticker.
Calls may be monitored for quality assurance. What's the logo?
Just change the eagle.
There's an NSA logo right here.
Yeah.
Those were fun at DEF CON.
Can't ban a t-shirt.
No.
That's silly.
Now I want it.
Like, you're just going to make people want it more.
I want it. I want one now.
There's a printing t-shirt place right down the street from my house. I bet that they would make one.
Just bring this picture in.
They wouldn't even ask any questions.
No. But then
we just need to put a mustache on the eagle, and then we'll be allowed to use it.
There you go. You
know? Yeah, that's 51%.
Sunglasses. Right? Just sunglasses, because, you know, they're all... Or like an earpiece.
I like that, the G-Man.
Yeah.
Give me the eye. I'm doing this.
Well, I still have hope for the future. Is there any future on the calendar?
Indeed there is. We will live another week thanks to TechCrunch Disrupt that's kicking off tomorrow, the hackathon. The conference runs through the 11th in San Francisco, but that's actually not the only conference in town. On Monday the 9th, VentureBeat's CloudBeat conference kicks off, runs through Tuesday the 10th. And looking ahead to October, the Note 3 and the Galaxy Gear will arrive in your hot little hand on October 1st and 2nd, respectively, for $300.
Your hot little hand better be big.
Yeah.
Your wrist, anyway.
And your pocket's deep.
Yeah. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Bruce. He says, "Hey, TNT crew, I'm catching up on a few days of Twit programming and finally got to the Samsung announcement and TNT discussing this. Everyone seems to be hung up on the fact that the Gear Watch only works with Samsung devices and not HTC or Motorola. I have one word to explain this. Apple. Nobody screams when Apple makes accessories that are proprietary to only iOS devices, either connector or software. I think Samsung feels like it is in the same position as Apple now and can call the shots and lock people into their ecosystem and keep them there because their devices are always high quality and popular. Huawei or Pantech couldn't make it work if they tried because they are not the brands that come up when talking about the best phones. Sony has tried it because of their Apple-like loyal customer base who will pay more for similar hardware to other manufacturers, but even they have not been successful. Just my 2.05 cents after Canadian to U.S. dollars conversion."
Okay, Bruce, I'm going to pull out of your email the point of Samsung is probably one of the only ones who could get away with this because of their base and because of the loyalty of their fans. And it makes sense for them to try to lock you in business-wise because they want to keep you happy. They want to make it attractive, like, hey, get the Note because then you can get the Galaxy Gear. However, nobody screams when Apple makes accessories that are proprietary is just absolutely untrue. Tons of people, probably you included, scream when Apple makes something proprietary. It happens all the time.
What I love is that Samsung and Sony have, like, switched, you know. Look at the Sony smartwatch series, you know, not just the new one, the smartwatch 2, but it's like those have been compatible with all Android devices because Sony, who used to do this kind of stuff with, like, you know, weird things like memory stick duos and stuff, and is now the open one or the more open one, I guess. It's all about being the underdog, huh?
I think maybe we've stopped screaming, perhaps, and started to be sort of resignedly going, there they go again. You're locked in. But on frame rate, for instance, we talk about Apple TV, but we always say that Roku is a better option because with Apple TV, you're stuck in the Apple universe. You got to use everything Apple, whereas other devices allow you to play in multiple places and have multiple options like Vudu and Hulu and all those sorts of things. Well, I guess you can get Hulu on the Apple TV. But if you're buying videos, Vudu isn't going to work on an Apple TV. They're just not going to allow it. So I think it's just another example of when you're like a fan of one side, you tend to exaggerate how the other side is treated, maybe. But good point. Nonetheless, that's exactly what Samsung's up to, trying to lock you in. Well, that brings us to the end of a very exciting show. I hope we've solved all the world's problems.
Most of them.
As we do every week.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm feeling really good about
me too.
About our Friday.
Thank you, Steve Gibson, once again, grc.com and twit.tv/SN for sharing his wisdom. And thank you, Darren Kitchen. A perfect day for you to be here as well. Good timing on that story. What's going on with ThreatWire?
Okay, well, ThreatWire, obviously, we've been covering that stuff. Our goal there is to kind of summarize things that threaten internet freedom. Latest on Hack 5 is an awesome segment on how to crack Windows passwords in 15 seconds or less with a USB rubber ducky. No cracking necessary. It's just, boom, plain text. There you go. It's too easy. Too easy. And then next week, we've got strong cryptography, kind of 101, how to properly implement it.
That's good. Will it be NSA-proof, do you think?
I have a good feeling about this one. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome. HIK5.org. And of course, before we go, Len Peralta, if you haven't been watching the video podcast, has been quietly drawing our stories. Len, take us through what you got today.
Sure thing. Well, the NSA story, I've sort of taken to drawing the NSA representing them as sort of like a Lon Chaney scary-looking character. So this is the NSA working with your private network. Of course, they've got the locks and keys, and they've got the evil laughter. PayPal, line jumping. I find this very interesting. I call it, I've decided to call it PayPal parkour, which I think could be the new thing. I can see that kind of happening. PayPal, call me. I'm also an advertising guy. Trojan, this is a weird one because the story that you've referenced, what I don't think you referenced online, was the Google Trojan horse. So here's the Trojan horse with all the little tiny apps inside of there waiting to jump out like it's a big surprise party. A little bit esoteric and very quick.
There's an OS in your browser and everyone's invited.
Yeah, exactly. Android making a big hit in the in the Chinese market. This is pretty cool. Yeah, I think that one's pretty neat. What's going to happen? Who knows what's going to happen? This is Elon Musk and the Tony Stark interface. This is Tony Stark, Iron Man, saying Tony Stark is a way cooler name than Elon Musk. I have that going for me, right? I'm such a fraud. story 6, the Xbox One not showing any video games in their commercials. I'm thinking about my sons who are excited about the Xbox One. This is your typical 14-year-old Xbox One user. Where go Halo?
I'm sorry. Why only football?
I crack myself up. That's what
obviously Len's
favorite. No one else loves it. Len does.
Where go Halo? And then finally, I was challenged at the top of the show, before the show and the pre-show, to do the randomizer. And I guessed right that the randomizer story about the NSA t-shirt being banned. I decided to go a different route. This is the NSA shirt no one wants. NSA, of course, standing for nothing short of awesome. And
I thought it was never say anything.
Never say anything.
Yeah.
No, this is actually put out by the NSA. So, you know, you see a lot of
That t-shirt's going to get banned so quickly.
Yeah.
We don't want you to say anything ever.
Sweet.
There you go.
Fantastic. As usual, peraltartzi.myshopify.com. If you want to find Len's stuff, including prints of the things that he draws on Tech News Today, and of course, LenPeralta.com. Great to have you back on the show, man.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Don't forget about our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. We use it to help us figure out our lineup each and every day. Get in there and vote. Get in there and submit some stories. Also, if there was a particular moment in any show of Tech News Today or any show on Twit, go to twit.tv/bestof. Let us know about it so we can put it in the year-end episode. That's twit.tv/bestof. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back Monday with our guest, Father Robert Ballasaire. See you then.